Welcome to Podcast with Laura Axtell, an educator with 26 years of experience ranging from special education to administration. In each episode of Podcast, Laura explores a current educational topic from a variety of perspectives to identify practical solutions to help improve the future of education. Podcast is brought to you by Reading Horizons, the creator of a data-driven literacy program for beginning readers, struggling readers, and English language learners of all ages. Visit readinghorizons.com to learn more. And now, Podcast with your host, Laura Axtell.
Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of Podcast. I'm Laura Axtell, your host. We're starting off with an extremely important and sometimes controversial topic that affects all of us. Today's podcast episode, part one of a two-part series, is based on how prepared new teachers are to teach reading. The recently released scores for the National Assessment of Educational Progress, known as NAEP, indicate that the majority of students in America, as measured in fourth and eighth grades, are not proficient readers. Moreover, these reading scores have not improved over the course of the last 30 years. How does this impact all of us? First, the field of education is struggling to find, support, and retain qualified teachers. Teachers are often frustrated at having to spend time and money to obtain the professional development they know they need in order to meet the needs of the students in their classrooms. I know I was. Next, when students don't learn to read in their early years, society pays the price. Billions of dollars are spent to provide intervention. Many students with reading difficulties are placed in special education programs or drop out of school. Probably many of you are familiar with the information I just shared. The goal of this podcast, then, is to explore the why behind the ongoing issues that have placed America behind many other countries in the world in reading achievement and what we can do about it. How do we provide the knowledge base and support for new teachers that will equip them to effectively teach all students to read? Two of our guests on this episode will share their perspectives to try and answer that question. Part two in the series will focus on solutions with specific recommendations. And each episode of Podcast allows you to view and print those solutions as well as other resources about the topic. One of the goals of Podcast is to share perspectives and to listen to what educators, parents, experts, and students have to say about an educational issue based on their experience. Another goal is to focus on solutions and to provide recommendations. This episode of Podcast is focused on teacher preparation for reading instruction, so let's start by hearing from a veteran teacher about her own preparation and her ideas for the future.
Well, welcome. Thank you for calling. I'm Pat. Currently, I am a part-time Title I teacher here in Indiana. I retired and I miss kids, so I was able to come back in a part-time spot, which is awesome. Prior to that, I was a Title I coordinator teacher. And prior to that, I was a classroom teacher. I taught fourth grade, second grade, and first grade.
How long have you been an educator, both in the classroom and as an administrator?
That's about 43 years.
Could you think back to the start of your career and describe the training that you had before you entered the classroom? What was the preparation for reading instruction at that point?
Well, first of all, we had 8 weeks of student teaching. That was my first step into the classroom. And my training, I had one class called Teaching Reading, and all we did was look at basal readers and compare them. That was it. That was my training. And then the following year, I had a class called Kitty Lit, and that's exactly what it was. We read Caldecott and Newbery Award winning. I had no training, none. I got my first phonics training when I walked into the classroom as a second grade teacher going, oh! There were three of us. Two of us were brand new teachers, and we would go over to the teacher next door and saying, what do we do? What do we do? We didn't even know how to group students back in the 70s. I had no idea what to do with these kids. What do I do with the little ones that can't read? You know, I honestly did not know what to do. The ones that got it, that was okay because I know what to do with them. Follow the guide. The other ones, we kind of winged it.
Do you think your experience was true of your colleagues as well?
Yeah. It was myself and my partner teacher who just started. She had no idea what she was doing either. And so we would just run to the other second grade teacher who had 30-odd years of experience. And we said, well, how do we do this? And they looked at us like, I didn't know. It wasn't until I got my reading endorsement, and I still have those books that I use to this day, because they had very basic information, how to assess kids. I didn't even know how to assess a reader. What do you do with them? How do you do this? Reading inventories? I learned how to give one.
As an educator with so much experience, Pat, what would you propose as recommendations that would benefit pre-service teachers?
I think, first of all, they need to know how to assess the kids. They really do. Don't be relying on, I don't know, all these different things. If you do rely on programs that assess kids, don't rely on just the score. Read what it says, because a lot of teachers will come to me and go, oh, look at this, there's a benchmark. And then when you read the fine print, it's benchmark for somebody in kindergarten.
So are you proposing that colleges and universities really focus on those explicit skills such as assessment and grouping?
Yes. I don't know if there are classes in phonetic instruction. I'm not sure. I haven't been in school for quite a while. I seriously doubt it. But I think that, yes, the instruction needs, especially those primary teachers, K-1, if we don't get those basics down, they're not going to go anywhere. They're going to struggle. They're going to be frustrated. They're upset. So we need to help our pre-service teachers learn those basic skills, basic skills. How do we teach kids to read? That's it. We don't throw sight words at them in kindergarten if they don't know the alphabet. So, yes, strategies for teaching reading, and it needs to be a full year, and they need to practice. Get them into the classroom. Give them a small group. Let them practice their skills. You know, please don't do what they did to me. I mean, I wouldn't have hired myself back, actually. I wouldn't. And make sure they master the skill. If half the class hasn't mastered it, then don't go anywhere. Back it up. You don't have to. Better that they slow down and learn it than keep pushing them forward.
Thank you, Pat, for volunteering your story and for sharing your solutions for teacher preparation. Now we are joined by Rob Rickenbrode, the Senior Managing Director for Teacher Preparation Strategies at the National Council on Teacher Quality. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Rickenbrode.
Good afternoon, Lauren. Thank you for having me.
Could you begin by explaining the goals and primary focus of the National Council on Teacher Quality?
Certainly. NCTQ, simply put, seeks to make sure that there is a quality teacher in front of every student every day of the school year. That's sort of the broad goal. How we go about it, we work in three areas. I focus, and my team focus on teacher preparation. So we look at how teachers are trained, elementary and secondary teachers primarily around the country. We have an arm that looks at state policies that sort of govern the profession, not just teacher preparation, but actual working conditions and the day-to-day sort of conditions that teachers face. So the group of folks that work at the state focus on the policies that deal with those things. And then we have a group of folks who focus at the district level. And again, mostly focusing on the district policies that govern the day-to-day activities of teachers as they go about their business in the school building. So we work with higher education, focusing on teacher preparation, states around state policy, and districts around district policy.
You mentioned having a quality teacher in front of students every day. How does NCTQ define a quality teacher?
Oh, that's a great question. A quality teacher can take any child from where they are to where they need to be in the classroom. So if you're an elementary teacher and you're teaching, let's say, third grade, you're going to move the child, teach the child what they need to know when they're learning to read, the fundamentals of arithmetic, some fundamentals in U.S. and world history, appropriate for the third grade, obviously, and some life and physical science. And it's more than just presenting the material. It's being sufficiently expert enough that you have in your repertoire a variety of ways of presenting the material so that something that may work with most of your kids may not work with a number of them, but you have the ability to adjust both what you do in the instruction so that all of the kids are learning.
So you're saying that the discussion of reading instruction goes back to teacher preparation, making sure that every teacher that goes into the classroom has that level of training?
Yes, absolutely.
The National Council on Teacher Quality evaluates and produces reviews of undergraduate and graduate teacher prep programs. Could you provide an overview of the purpose of those reviews?
Yes, and I would add, over the past two editions, we've expanded to look at a small sample of alternative route programs as well. We want to present, based on a series of standards that we apply uniformly to both elementary and secondary programs, training teachers for initial licensors, so their first license, they're becoming teachers. We want to use a standardized set of metrics on a comprehensive and representative sample of programs around the country, so that we can compare programs to judge which ones are doing things adequately and which aren't. So we use the same set of measures on thousands of programs across the country to try and get a handle on which programs are doing things well and which ones are struggling or need support.
Where do those metrics come from?
So we started back in 2006. We did kind of a pilot project along these lines, just actually focusing on reading. So we had a very small sample compared to the work that we're doing now. I think there were 72 programs in that work where we collected the syllabi for all of the required courses that focus on teaching elementary teachers how to teach reading to children. So we got the syllabi, and we purchased all of the required textbooks for those syllabi as well. And we sent the syllabi out to a group of reading experts, and many of those folks are still with us today, 12 years later. They are former or current building level or district level, and in some cases state level reading coaches. We've got some superintendents in there. All of them know a lot about elementary reading instruction. So we send the syllabi to them, and they look at the content of the lectures and then the design of the assignments and the tests and quizzes and any practice teaching. And what they're looking for is, in our eyes, a very baseline coverage of the five key components that came out of the National Reading Panel back in 2000. So we're looking for those five components. Phonemic awareness, which is the ability to hear all of the sounds that make up the English language. Phonics, which is translating from the written symbols to those sounds. Fluency, which is the ability to read quickly and accurately and with what is called prosody or expression. And then vocabulary and reading comprehension. So we're looking for coverage of those five things in the syllabi, in those elements of the syllabi, lectures, assignments, tests, quizzes, and practice teaching. So that's one group. The textbooks go to another group of reviewers who are all PhD level folks in reading instruction, still involved actively in either training teachers or researching how to train teachers in elementary reading. And they look for the coverage of those same five components in the textbooks. Is the textbook presentation adhering to what we know, or what is known, rather, on the state-of-the-art of knowledge in those five key components? Then we put those two things together and give programs credit for adequately covering some number of those components by combining what we see in the syllabus or syllabi with what we see in the textbook. The bar is very low. We're pretty agnostic as to design. So there could be three required courses, and one of the course happens to cover phonics really well, which we do actually see, where there are courses that are dedicated just to phonics. If that course adequately covers phonics, then we say that the program itself adequately covers phonics. So we don't have to see phonics across all of the required courses. We just have to see it cross a threshold in a particular course to give the entire program credit for that component. The thresholds, in my opinion, are very, very, very low. I'll describe what they are and then outline some implications of that. If a course is using a textbook that is good in phonics, say, and then there are two lectures on phonics throughout the entire semester, that's adequate coverage for us. So a couple of lectures and a good textbook, that's adequate coverage. A textbook and a final exam, that's adequate coverage as well. So there are lots and lots of combinations between those elements, the textbooks, the lectures, the assignments, and the practice teaching, where we say there's adequate coverage for the component. The implication of that is we don't find adequate coverage in many programs across the country. And what that means, sort of peeling back the layers, is programs aren't using good textbooks, or they're not dedicating actual class time to discussing the components, or they're dedicating too little class time, or there are no assignments, or there's no final exam, sort of measuring those very, very basic things that we're looking for in the syllabus and textbook that should be there that we don't see. So just really quickly, what we look at now is admissions criteria. So how do programs select aspiring teachers? How do they admit them? What are their criteria? Then there's this broad category of knowledge. And at the elementary level, that is reading, elementary mathematics, and then the other sort of liberal arts subjects, because elementary teachers are typically responsible for teaching everything. So we look at the training or the content knowledge expectations the programs have in history, in writing, composition, literature, both world and children's literature, and then the sciences. So that's knowledge for elementary teachers. For secondary teachers, knowledge is in the subject they're going to be teaching. So if you're going to be a high school mathematics teacher, what are the mathematics expectations the program has? If you're going to be a science teacher, what are the science expectations, and so on. And then the last category is what we call practice, and that has two standards in it, student teaching and classroom management. So that is sort of a long-winded answer, but those are the things that we're looking for: admissions, knowledge, and practice across 2,600 programs at the elementary and secondary level in the United States.
You mentioned that many of the colleges and universities were not teaching all five components.
Yep.
So what were they teaching? Was the primary focus on higher level skills, such as vocabulary and comprehension?
That's completely, completely true. And that's been true for all editions of the review, going to this most recent one last month, where we're looking at graduate and alternative elementary programs. The other more fundamental, more basic components, we see less and less, although phonemic awareness and fluency are the ones that we see the least. We see phonics, oddly enough, because of some of the background in reading, we see phonics more than we see phonemic awareness and fluency. There are fundamental skills that you have to master and be fluent in to make sort of that comprehension and sort of vocabulary development through reading work.
We'll be right back.
Podcast is sponsored by Reading Horizons. With data-informing software and teacher-led instruction, students receive targeted intervention that leads to rapid reading improvement. Visit readinghorizons.com/demo to see how Reading Horizons can transform your reading instruction.
I have to ask this question. Are there some programs out there that aren't teaching any of the five components for reading instruction at all?
Yes. Yes, there are. The only caveat I would say is, remember, we have this threshold a program has to cross. So we might see some, like one of the components is one of many topics in one lecture, which means that they're dedicating too little time to the component. So when we say that a program does not cover, say, phonemic awareness, what we mean is that they have not crossed our threshold for coverage in the combination of things that we look for. So to be perfectly clear, it either means they're covering it too little or they're not doing it all. But the direct answer to your question is yes. We have seen programs that do not cover some of those components at all.
What is the process for evaluating teaching programs at colleges and universities? How are the ratings determined?
There's an overall program level determination, which weights and combines all of the standards I talked about. And what we're issuing now is a percentile ranking. So a program at the 99th percentile is better than 99% of the programs that we've examined across the country, whereas a program at the 10th percentile is better than 10% of the programs that we've looked at across the country. So we combine the standards into a percentile ranking, a score that we then use to rank the programs. But we also publish grades for each standard. For reading, for example, for a program to earn an A, they have to cover all five components adequately in any number of courses. They have to cover all five of them. A B is 4, a C is 3, and so on. So we issue grades for each of the standards and then sum them up to an overall program score that folks can use to compare programs across the country.
In 2016, an NCTQ document called A Closer Look at Early Reading published results of evaluations of 820 undergraduate elementary programs. A key finding was that only 2 in 5, or 39%, of the 820 undergraduate elementary programs were providing instruction in all five essential components of early reading instruction. So this question comes more to why. Based on the extensive research that supports these essential components, what is your assessment of why more teacher training programs have not incorporated all five components?
That's actually a very hard question to answer. Higher education teacher preparation, the field in general, does not think that what we're doing is methodologically valid. Now, we actually didn't come up with the idea of looking at syllabi to see what we could see. That was actually first done by David Steiner, I'm not certain when, early 90s, I believe, looking at course syllabi to see sort of the slant of coursework. So somebody else figured out the methodology. But there is this notion out there that you can't see what we claim to be seeing by just looking at syllabi and college catalogs and student teaching. And part of that comes from teacher preparation programs are used to an accreditation type process where this big long preparation for a multi-day visit by a team of folks who comes out and reviews binders and binders and binders of material, interviews faculty and staff, may or may not observe classes, but they're on site doing a lot more work. When you're used to that level of sort of evaluation, what we do seems pretty flimsy. The second thing is many folks actually still to this day don't know the content of our standards or what we're actually looking for. So we still have to explain what we're looking for in reading and what we're looking for in student teaching, for example. And sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes when I'm in those conversations and I'm talking about, say, student teaching, for example, and I say, we're looking for the number of observations, there's actually a research basis behind this that points to 5 observations being a pretty good number. There's a series of papers out there that we rely on for that particular element of student teaching. And we should be able to see or figure out how many observations a student teacher gets through the material that we're asking for. So sometimes when I can get somebody on the phone and explain that, they can see that we can measure what we say we're measuring based on the material we get. They may not think that our conclusions are valid, that we can say your student teaching experience is good or bad based on what we're looking for. They may still have issues with that, but they can see that what we claim to be able to measure is actually measurable by the evidence that we're getting. So there's no agreed upon sort of academic knowledge base, when you think of textbooks as encapsulating that, that the field uses. So part of what's going on is folks are using just textbooks that either cover one thing really well, say comprehension, which it oftentimes is comprehension, and then either give no coverage or short shrift, or the worst case, coverage of a component that actually undermines what the science says of that component in the rest of the textbook. So the first thing is oftentimes folks just are not using a good textbook. There are great textbooks out there. They're used in a very, very small number of programs. That probably points to a deeper issue. And now I'm going to jump outside of what we see in the review to pull in some other research. There's a team led by Dr. Joshi and Dr. Cantrell Binks. And they designed a reading knowledge survey, or a test, much like some of the reading tests for licensure you see around the country, basically designed to see what folks know about some of those components. And they gave them to teacher candidates in programs, but then they also gave them to the folks who were teaching the coursework that those teacher candidates were taking. And what they found was the folks doing the teaching didn't know the science either.
Thanks, Mr. Rickenbrode. We look forward to hearing more from you on our next episode. Now we are joined by Dr. Emily Binks Cantrell. Dr. Cantrell is a clinical assistant professor of reading and language arts education in the Department of Teaching, Learning, and Culture at Texas A&M. She teaches both undergraduate and graduate courses in reading and multicultural education, co-directs the Texas A&M Reading Clinic, and serves as the Reading Language Arts Program Coordinator, as well as the Lohman Learning Community Coordinator. That sounds like a busy job. on top of that, you have published in many international journals and presented at many international conferences on the topics of teacher knowledge and preparation in research-based reading instruction. So welcome to PodClass, Dr. Cantrell. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me here.
So we're going to jump right in. Could you speak to your own experience as an elementary teacher and reading specialist about what you think is necessary for teachers to know about reading instruction and intervention before they enter the classroom?
Absolutely. So what I thought as an elementary teacher about that versus what I learned during my training as a reading specialist are two very different things. When I first entered the classroom after completing my pre-service teacher training, my thought was that as long as I could engage the students, as long as I could make it fun, as long as I had good classroom management, that I would be able to teach reading well. And while all of those things are very important and very necessary, that's not enough. And fortunately, I had the opportunity to go back and get my master's as I was teaching and my reading specialist certification. And during that time, I realized that there's a lot of research out there about how to effectively teach reading that I had never learned as an undergrad during my pre-service teacher training. And we know, and what I learned is that 40% of kids are always going to struggle with reading if they never receive direct, explicit, and systematic instruction based upon the structure of the language. And just because you can read doesn't mean that you are able to teach that way and to teach those things. It requires a teacher who has an explicit understanding of the language and the structure of the language. And so fortunately, during my training, I did learn about that structure. I learned what direct, explicit, systematic instruction looks like, and I was able to change the way I taught. But also at that time, I realized we really need to do a better job of preparing teachers to effectively teach reading. There's this big gap that exists between research and practice, and I think we're making strides in closing that gap, but there's still work to be done, and that's because we know research tells us the most powerful weapon against reading failure is quality instruction. But that quality instruction requires a knowledgeable teacher. And that factor can make a bigger impact on a student's success or lack thereof in reading than any other factor that may be stacked against the student. So it's critical. It's critical that we have knowledgeable teachers in the classrooms who are able to deliver that essential instruction for students.
So that really leads to my next question. You've been working in the field for a long time. You've served as a mentor for new elementary teachers in public schools. Do you think that most new teachers come prepared with that knowledge and really know what to do to teach that 40% of kids when they enter the classroom?
Mm-hmm. So again, I can speak from my own personal experience as well as from what research tells us, and I think it's good, you know, to consider both, your own personal experience as well as what the research is saying. In my own personal experience, obviously, I didn't know when I started teaching, and then more recently, I've been mentoring new teachers in surrounding school districts, and I do think we're doing a better job in some ways in teacher preparation. Still, we're seeing a lot of new teachers don't know how to interpret all the data they get from all of the assessments that most schools require their teachers to do now. They have all the student data, but they don't know how to interpret that data so that they can target their instruction to the students' specific areas of strength and weakness, and how to plan small group focused instruction. Because, for instance, a common practice is to put all of your struggling readers together in one small group and give them all of the same intervention. But students struggle with reading for very different reasons, and the intervention has to be targeted on their specific needs and why they're struggling with reading, which can be very different for two different students. So I would say that what I'm seeing is new teachers are still lacking the knowledge they need to effectively teach reading, and the research is telling us that pre-service teachers are still, and in-service teachers are still lacking that knowledge too. Back in 1994, Louisa Moats conducted one of the first studies of teacher knowledge in reading, and she found that general educators, special educators alike, lacked the knowledge they need to effectively teach reading. And since that time, in 1994, numerous other research studies have been conducted on teacher knowledge from pre-service teachers, in-service, special education, general education, even among teacher educators. And what we're finding is that most still lack the knowledge they need to effectively teach reading.
Well, you and Dr. Joshi at Texas A&M have done some of that research and published on pre-service training for teachers. And your research has specifically looked at how well pre-service teachers are prepared to teach struggling readers. Could you summarize some of the findings of your studies?
What we did is, Dr. Joshi and I, we expanded the study of teacher knowledge of effective reading instruction to actually a new population of teachers. We looked at pre-service teachers, but we were also looking at their university instructors. And our hypothesis was that one of the reasons many of our pre-service and in-service teachers lack the knowledge of effective reading instruction is because they may not be receiving adequate preparation at the university level, and that might be due to a lack of knowledge and understanding among those who are preparing the teachers themselves, that is, the university instructors. And what we found is that the university instructors performed very similar to their pre-service teachers from our surveys. And in fact, there was no statistically significant differences between the performance of the university instructors and their pre-service teachers. So that's a little scary. Both demonstrated a lack of understanding of these important concepts. So what we did in our work is we expanded the Peter effect, which states that one cannot give what one does not possess, to reading education. So we can't expect our teachers to leave our universities, our teacher preparation programs, adequately prepared to teach beginning or struggling readers if our university instructors and the teacher educators themselves do not possess an understanding of these fundamental reading constructs. So, you know, I talked about the importance of the teacher at the K-12 level, but that really the importance of the teacher at any level, even in teacher preparation programs, cannot be understated. It makes a big difference.
Well, that kind of speaks to some of the reviews that are coming out of the National Council on Teacher Quality. And they've looked at pre-service training for teachers at the undergraduate and graduate levels. And after analyzing hundreds of programs, their studies show that much of the research about effective reading instruction isn't being provided at teacher training programs, particularly regarding foundational reading skills.
Mm-hmm.
So could you speak to that and what you see as the result?
Yeah, our findings are in alignment with what NCTQ is finding as well. So the National Council on Teacher Quality, they've analyzed teacher training programs. They've also looked at the textbooks that teacher training programs use to teach reading. And what they're finding is that most of the programs do not teach the foundational skills that are so important. They are missing components of those foundational skills, the phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, comprehension. And beyond that, even things like morphology and writing and spelling, that most teacher preparation programs do not adequately cover all of those essential components of reading. And also that the textbooks that are being used in teacher preparation programs and the reading courses don't give quality coverage of those concepts as well. And, you know, the number of courses that pre-service teachers take in reading education can vary. It can be anywhere from one or two to all the way to up to five or more. But what's more important than the quantity of the courses they're taking is the quality of the courses they're taking. And fortunately, NCTQ has placed an emphasis on not only looking at the quantity, but the quality and what are they teaching in those courses. And similar to what we found, most of the courses don't cover everything that they need to cover to ensure that our teachers are well prepared to teach reading. And the textbooks oftentimes are lacking that information too. So I will say, though, and maybe this is leading into something else, but in our study with the Peter effect, I don't mean to sound all negative. We actually found something good and positive, too. And that is that we also assessed a group of university instructors who had participated in a bi-yearly professional development program for at least 2 years. And not only was their performance on the knowledge survey statistically significantly higher than their counterparts, that is, than the university instructors who had not been part of that program, but their students' or the pre-service teachers' knowledge was also statistically significantly higher. So that's a huge finding, that when university instructors have a higher knowledge and understanding of how to effectively teach reading, and that can be heightened to a proficient level with relatively simple efforts and to stay abreast of current research and practices in the field, and most importantly, that knowledge will carry over to their students or the pre-service teachers, I think that's huge. So it has strong implications for teacher preparation programs, but there are some challenges that still remain. At the current time, most universities don't require their instructors to attend professional development seminars or to make other efforts to stay up to date with the most current research. So I would argue that teacher accountability is an issue for the university level just as much as the K-12 level. But of course, there's concepts of things like scholastic or academic freedom, which can pose a few barriers to holding university instructors accountable for the understanding and preparing their pre-service teachers with that understanding. So there's good news that we can make a difference, but you know, there are some barriers.
We're going to end episode one here and invite you to join us for part two in the next episode of Podcast, where educators, parents, and our experts will provide their recommendations for improving teacher training for reading instruction. Thank you to our guests who contributed to this first episode of Podcast: Pat, a veteran educator, Rob Rickenbrode from the National Center on Teacher Quality, and Dr. Emily Cantrell, education professor and researcher at Texas A&M. Each provided a valuable perspective, and we look forward to the next episode and solutions to the issues that have been raised today. A special thank you to our listeners. We hope that you have found this episode of interest and that you'll join us again for future episodes of Podcast.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Podcast. To be notified when future episodes are available, subscribe to Podcast on iTunes. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, leave us a review. To submit discussion topics or to recommend a student, parent, educator, or expert to be interviewed on future episodes, visit readinghorizons.com/podcast. Podcast is brought to you by Reading Horizons, the creator of a data-driven literacy program for beginning readers, struggling readers, and English language learners of all ages. With data-informing software and teacher-led instruction, students receive targeted intervention that leads to rapid reading improvement. Visit readinghorizons.com to learn more.